I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive eater. And if you're looking for a Step 10 workshop, you're in the right place. And if you're not, you're probably still in the right place. Okay, so I'll just give you kind of a little rundown of kind of what we have planned, but it may not exactly go that way. We're just going to kind of play it by ear. But what we have planned is that we're going to have Mary is going to share her experience, strength, and hope in working her 10th step. Then I'm going to share mine as much as I can, my experience, really. And then we have a handout, but I'm not going to pass that out until after we've shared, because sometimes that's a little distracting. So then we'll pass out a handout that has kind of a lot of questions to ask yourself in doing a 10th step. And then we'll do some writing and some sharing and some writing and some sharing. Okay, that's how it's supposed to go. We'll see how it actually goes. So I'm going to open it up for Mary, for her to share your story. And Mary, thank you so much for being here and doing service.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mary. I'm a food addict, compulsive eater, and I know it. Glad to be here, thankful to be here. Whenever I'm asked to give service like this at a See How event, just being able to say yes for me is such a blessing. I haven't been given a time limit. You guys may be in trouble. When I am speaking at a meeting or leading a meeting, it's the only time I get to really qualify fully, my full qualification, because if I did it at a regular meeting, we wouldn't have a meeting. So I'll just tell you a little bit about myself and my background. I came into my first food recovery meeting. I'd like to do that. I think I'm more comfortable standing. But you can't see, right? Okay. I came into my first food recovery meeting the first week of November 1962. My youngest son was 6 months old. My eating was completely out of control, and I had no idea why or what was wrong with me. I thought I was insane. There was a little charm school a lot of you probably haven't heard of in Camarillo. It's not there anymore. I think once they gave up on me, they just closed it down. A little town a little north of where I live in the San Fernando Valley. I came into our mother program, of course. There was no how, no OA how, no see how, no how. And I was in that program for 25 years, and I had, I am very grateful to that program because I don't know where I would have been. I am a suicidal binger, and I even know that one night I was standing in my house after a binge with the telephone in my hand ready to call 911 because I thought I was going to burst my stomach. I had heard a story about a young woman who did that, lost a lot of weight, binged like crazy, and burst her stomach and died. And I never really believed that story. I never really did. But that night, I was afraid it might be true. And I have since heard another similar story about, it was a man, though, and he did survive. Suicidal binges. And so when I came into Overeaters Anonymous, the thing for me was to know that there was a disease called compulsive eating, that I wasn't insane, that there were other people who were doing what I did with food, and they talked about it. With me, it was a secret. Nobody knew. I remember my husband, number one, on the telephone talking to a friend and saying, I don't know how Mary gets fat. She never eats anything. And that, in short, is the story of my life. Everything was a secret. My life was a secret. My binging was a secret. My marriage was a secret. Nobody knew what went on behind closed doors. To the whole world, we looked like the all-American family, camping, square dancing, three kids. You know, it all looked very pretty on the outside. It was really ugly on the inside. I'm not going to go into all of that. We're here to talk about step 10. I struggled for many years in the program, going to meetings, sitting out there in the rooms. I ate my way up to 210 pounds. To qualify, I currently have 3 years, 7 months, and I think 22 days of current CEA How abstinence. I'm actually abstinent for 5.5 years. I'm not going to go into that little story. I am about 78 pounds. I just had a birthday, and I'm 76. And I'm so glad to say that. I am 76. And so I claim 76 pounds, but it's really 78, sometimes even 80. But in order to remember, I just told one of my sponsees that one thing about being around for a very long time and being in program for a long time and being my age is that you have a very long story to tell, but you can't remember what it is. So, when Karen asked me to share on step 10, my first thought went to the one thing that I think I love most about See How. Now, I would say that, just like I say, every time I'm in a study group and we study a particular step, I say, oh, this is my favorite step. You know, and then we get to, oh, this is my favorite step. And step 10, the thing that brought me back to See How 3 years, 7 months ago was I was abstinent in another program. I was doing fine. I was at my goal weight, which was 145 pounds, and I weigh 130 today. So everything was beautiful. I was sponsoring people. I was being sponsored. I worked just a perfect program in this other room. The abstinence that I had was very similar to ours. I was looking for something in my nightstand drawer. And if your nightstand drawer is like mine, you know you have to empty it out on the bed to find anything. And so I came across Forever Abstinent. And I sat down and read it. And I thought, why did I ever stop going to See How meetings? And it brought me back here. Not because I had to get abstinent. Not because I was in the pain of the food. Not because I was gaining weight and didn't know where the heck that was going to go, but because I remembered the process that we work in these rooms. From the moment a newcomer walks in the door and we hand them those questions, well, or you read the questions to them, some of us give them to our sponsees and let them answer the questions every day in call. And some read the question and the sponsee answers. All the way through, all those questions, I completely give credit to the process in these rooms that brought me to a place today where I can have back-to-back abstinence, weighed and measured, no flour, no sugar, quantities, oh my God. The reason I refer to myself as a food addict is because I could binge on anything. And to tell you the binges that I have had without sugar and without flour, I know it's just trying to fill up that hole inside, whatever it took. So we get busy. We will come into these rooms and we get busy working the steps. And we go through step 1, 2, and 3. early in my recovery, I fought taking that fourth step. I fought that for so long. I didn't need it. That was great for people who really had a problem. I just ate. You know, I just had to know how to eat right. I did every argument that I could find, and I put it off. I was afraid. I was just simply afraid to take a real good look at Mary. But I kept hearing people share about when they took an inventory, how wonderful it felt, how relieved they were, how they grew through the inventory. And so I finally did the fourth step, fifth step. That was not hard for me. I always trusted people in these rooms. And to talk about myself was not difficult. To talk about myself honestly, that was another story. That took a little time. My very first inventory was all about what they did to me. And if you had them, you'd be a compulsive eater too, like me. And so I have written a number. I have retaken that inventory and given it away many times. So there's 4, 5, 6. Oh, my God. We have to make amends. We have to say we're sorry. I mean, it was their fault. What can I say I'm sorry for? I'm the one who ate. That was tough. That was tough. These steps are not easy. They're not easy to go all the way through. You get to step 9. We've made amends. There's the promises. We read those promises in the meeting all the time. And we're just so happy when we start to have those promises realized in our life after step 9. Here comes step 10. And I know for a long time in program 2, I was a two-stepper. 1 and 12. I thought all I had to do was get abstinent, lose a little weight, and then I could tell you how to do it. I knew it. Yeah. You come and do it. I didn't know nothing. I mean nothing. I thought I was so mature. I thought I was so... I was an old soul, I always told myself. That's why I always had to marry older men, because I was so old. When I was in high school, I always dated men who were in college or in the service or something. I was so immature. I was such a baby. And we come to step 10. And the book tells us that when we reach step 10, we just begin. We continue to take personal inventory, which assumes that we have done it. Because if you haven't done something, you can't continue to do it. But I thought jumping from 1, 10, 11, and 12 was also a good idea when I realized that 1 and 12 didn't work. It doesn't. So we've gone through all these steps, and now we're on 10, and we begin. We're just beginning. We're just starting to live in the Spirit. And there's so much discussion on, at least I have had a lot of discussion on how to do a 10th step. There's a lot of forms that are written. We're going to get a handout here today that has a lot of information on it. There's a lot there. Now, in the book, it tells us that we look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And every day when I write my food down, I write those 4 things on the top of the page. Those are the things that I'm looking for. Now do I do it at night? Do I do it in the morning? Sometimes it depends on who your sponsor is. One sponsor will say, write at night. Go over the day that you just had and pick out, you know, what happened during that day and look for your character defects. And I had another sponsor who said, no, you write in the morning. Write every morning. And I wound up writing sometimes about yesterday because nothing happened yet today. Yet. I wake up very early in the morning. And, but when you read the book, step 10 is very short. It's very short in here. There's not a whole lot. And that's all it says, is that we look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And then there's this wonderful thing that I always thought was part of it, on awakening. On awakening, it tells you what to look at for the day. We make our plan for the day. And then there's when we retire at night. But that's in step 11. And I don't want to jump ahead, because I need to make sure that I'm working all of the 12 steps. So I take this book literally, and I work what it tells me to work every day. Now, I have gone through this book so many times with study groups, with just in many different ways to go through the book and work the steps the way it says in here. And also our 12 and 12. Our 12 and 12 is a wonderful guide to working these steps. It also gives you a few more character defects to look for. And I need to, most recently, Joe and Charlie have been my guides through this, through the big book. And I just love those guys. I really love them. And they're on my iPhone, and they're on my iPad, and I've got my headset. And they point out that we have come this far. The thing is for us to find a way to be able to stay abstinent day after day after day. And there isn't anyone in this room, I don't think, or very few of us, who will walk through that door and get abstinent and just stay that way. We know what a challenge we have living every day with the food. So let me tell you a little bit about what it was like before step 10 and before I really took this step seriously. I would be, you know, before program on a diet. And I was a good dieter. I was a great dieter. I took it very seriously. I was methodical, wrote everything down, made every plan, would lose weight, feel good. I feel great. And even in program and being abstinent, feeling wonderful, feeling alive, feeling well, and going through my day, and all of a sudden something would come up. And it would be, you know, one of the major character defects that drove me to the food so many times was the fear of abandonment and the feeling of abandonment. I was raised by, my mother was a gambler. She was a Gardena poker player. In case any of you know Gardena. And that's where she was all the time. So my little sister and I were abandoned. My father was a workaholic. My mother was gone all the time. I was 6, 7 years old and responsible for my younger sister. So I had this, I grew up with this thing, this fear of abandonment. Anybody would leave and I would go into this feeling of depression. But I didn't know it. I didn't know it. So here I am moving along, losing weight, feeling great. And all of a sudden, I'm face down in the food. And I don't know why. I don't know what happened. I must be crazy. I must be nuts. If anybody knew what I was doing, they'd lock me up. I had no idea. And this, it could have been anything. It could have been a word. You know, I could have made a mistake somewhere and not be able to forgive myself. These things were just an argument with my husband, a sick child, I mean, a myriad of things that all of a sudden send you off balance. You're off balance. And the only thing I knew was to grab the food. And once I grabbed it, I couldn't stop. I could not stop. So that 10th step, that's the purpose of the 10th step. I'm already getting better, going through those first 9 steps and doing them again and again and again if necessary, and it's necessary. and coming to that 10th step and knowing that, wow, I have this fear of abandonment. And when somebody says goodbye to me and they're leaving, or even if I was leaving, I could have been going away on a trip and feel that separation and that fear and that loss. And that hunger comes in. The food looks interesting. But I know it now, and I don't touch it this time. And I put it to prayer, and I write about it. And it gets better. And it gets better. And it gets better. And it may still come up. But I know it now. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of those fears. And I know that if I pick up the food, I'm going to go through this thing over and over and over again until I learn to go through whatever comes up in my day without picking up the food. There's a very simple name or word or expression for it. That is simply that I don't eat no matter what. No matter what. And I have even had to go over those words in my mind and say, what does that really mean to you, Mary? It's just like the Serenity Prayer, which, you know, I mean, I've been listening to that Serenity Prayer for a lot of years, and it becomes words. Just words. It's like, okay, you know. And I have to stop every once in a while and really think about what I'm powerless over, what I can and cannot change. And what does I don't eat no matter what mean? It means that, you know, I have an argument with my husband, I can eat? No. Really? No. No. You know, I have a flat tire when I'm supposed to be leading a meeting or something and I can't get there on time? Can I eat over that one? No. And ad infinitum. We know what those things are. It could be anything. I always said that, you know, with the big things, if we have a, God forbid, now don't listen, turn it off for a minute, earthquake, I can get through that. I can get through that abstinence. The break of fingernail and whew, crazy. So I have to watch my day. Now it sounds like a great big deal. And this handout gives a lot of stuff. And there are times when I can't even come up with one of these. I mean, there's just four things there. And I can't come up with one today. But I'll just start writing, and I'll write and write about my day. Just write about the day. And something will show up, or it won't. It doesn't have to. But I'm looking. I am watching. So that I don't have to get caught off kilter. And it isn't at night necessarily or in the morning necessarily. It's just being aware throughout the day. I do my prayer and meditation in the morning. It's like brushing my teeth, taking a shower, getting dressed, walking the dog. It's all done in the morning. My prayer and meditation is done in the morning. And does it mean that I can't pray and meditate at noon? Or that I can't pray and meditate at 4 o'clock if I need to? And I can write, and I can watch, and I can read, and I can get quiet, and I can talk to my sponsor. I can call all of my sponsors. I have more than one sponsor. I'm in more than one program. And I can call until I reach somebody. These tools are very important. And when I work them every day, they help to keep me steady. And they, you know, I was told a long time ago, don't skip a tool, because you never know which one is keeping you abstinent today. I don't know. I have never had 5 years, 50 years in program, I have never had 5 years of back-to-back abstinence. I don't know why I'm 130 pounds instead of 145, like that was always my goal weight. I don't know. I'm 76. It's not supposed to be that way. I'm older. I'm not old, but I'm older. I'm not supposed to have, my metabolism is supposed to slow down. God works against all those rules. I have this wonderful relationship with my higher power. I'm going to stop in a minute, but I want to read something out of the big book. My relationship with my higher power today is one of gratitude. And I am so full of gratitude today. And I find very simple, very simple. You know, there was a time when we used to, some people would share that I get up in the morning and I read 7 meditation books. So someone else would get up and say, well, I read 9 meditation books. And, at that time, I did not have a good relationship with a higher power, and I was listening to everybody. And I would try anything. And so maybe 10 meditation books, if I could find them. But you know what I found? I found that by the time I finished reading the last book, I couldn't remember anything that I had read. And so today my meditation is very simple. It's very silent. And my only prayer is thank you, God. Thank you, God. I wake up in the morning and I say thank you for this day, for this abstinent day, because I believe I have the gift of an abstinent day. And when I put my head on the pillow, and that's all I have to do, is put my head on the pillow tonight, abstinent. That's all. And I say, thank you, God, for another abstinent day. What he fills those days with, that's up to him, you know. And I have the tools to work through anything that I need to work through. It is work. It is time. It is effort. It is worth it. And I want to tell you why. Okay. There are promises all through this big book, not just at the end of step 9, those promises that we read in our meetings. And it says here, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in sugar flour. If tempted, we recoil from it as a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward food has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality. Now, I have to honestly say that I don't feel that I am completely neutral around food yet, but I'm a lot closer than I have ever been. Safe and protected, yes. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. I do what I do because I want that. And I hope you do too. Thank you for letting me share.
I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive eater. Today, I have 6 years, 10 months, and 22 days of abstinence, and I'm maintaining 25-pound weight loss. For me, I'm not going to get into my entire story. I'm going to talk more specifically about just step 10, because I came to this program through another program where I had practiced all 12 steps, including the 10th step, but not according to the way it is in the big book. And the 10th step has really been a process for me. It's been an evolution. And I grew up being extremely self-conscious. And so I was used to checking my behavior constantly. What did I do? How did it affect you? What do you think about me because of what I did? All of that stuff. Should I have done that? Should I have not done that? That is not what the 10th step is about. It is not about beating ourselves up over our behavior or being so self-absorbed like I was. I didn't realize that was self-absorption to be that self-conscious, to think that everything I did impacted everyone else. Yes, what I do affects other people, but it doesn't make or break most people's day. Most of us are worried about ourselves. We are preoccupied with our own lives, our own needs, our own, you know, and you're probably not paying a whole lot of attention to what I'm doing. But my disease tells me you are. You're checking, you're making all these judgments about me, you know, all that stuff. And why does my disease tell me that? Because that's what my disease is doing. You know, it is judging me over and over and over again. So that's not what we're talking about when we talk about doing a 10-step in program. God knows most of us know how to do that really well. We know how to beat ourselves up. We know how to be hard on ourselves. What we need to do is do an honest self-appraisal, because that type of self-appraisal is dishonest. It's as dishonest as denying that we've ever done anything wrong. It is over the top, you know. So what I have learned in program, so basically the way I started 10 step, doing a 10 step, was to basically write down everything that I thought I should be doing. Everything that I should be doing that I wasn't doing. And believe me, it was a long list. And who wants to do that? Who is going to keep that up for any length of time? It's just demoralizing. And I was sitting with my husband the other day. He's been programmed too. Not this program, but another program. And we were talking about the demoralization of the disease, you know. And to me, what I have gotten from working the steps is that the point of demoralization that I allow myself to get to before going enough is so much less. I mean, I can't even tell you how much pain I used to tolerate, and I just don't tolerate it anymore. And that's directly a result of working the steps. But so we got out the dictionary and looked up demoralization. And one of the definitions was absence of spirit, you know, just denial of spirit. And it's like, yeah, that's what it is. And doing the 10 step and looking at those four things, dishonesty, resentment, selfishness, self-centeredness, those are the things that block my spirit. They block my connection with my higher power. And so does the food. So does the food. For me, some other things do. Some relationships block my connection with my higher power. Mostly not the people, but the power that I give to other people. That can block me from my higher power. Also, I have a compulsion with working. That blocks me. If I allow myself to overwork, and that doesn't necessarily just mean for pay. That means the incessant need to keep busy, the compulsion to constantly be in motion. That blocks me from my higher power. If I don't settle down for a little bit each day, that's the 11th step, and just allow the clutter in my head to be released, I'm disconnected from the source of my power, the source of my energy, my creator. Whatever you want to call it God. I call it God because it's easy. People understand. That's what I mean. But it is nothing like the God that I grew up with. Nothing like that. So gradually, I let go of this incessant need to kind of catalog all of the things, all of the should-haves, you know. And, you know, my mantra is, coulda, shoulda, woulda, didn't. Now what? And that's what the 10th step helps us with, too. Now what? You just hurt someone. Now what? I got to make amends. Before I got the program, I had no idea how to make a proper amends. I had no idea how to allow myself to be vulnerable enough to say, I've done this, you know, I could have done this better. I'm sorry. What can I do to remedy that? You know? And so I get, with the steps, I get, and really with the guidance of a sponsor, I get the understanding of how to do that. And I get the willingness to do that. Because I just wasn't willing enough to be that vulnerable with other people. Because I came from a place where it was not safe to be vulnerable. It was like I had to keep my guard up, you know. At least that's the way I thought it was. I don't feel that way today. So, but CHOW, when I got to CHOW, I got the AA Big Book, you know, the instruction manual. Which is just really, I mean, it's all in here. It's all in here, but you don't have to stop here. You know, that's the other thing. This is a start. The Big Book says we know only a little. More will be revealed. And more has been revealed for me. And I just have to stay open to that being revealed and to not avoid doing the, and I'm going to call it work, but it's not work. As a matter of fact, I'm in another program where they don't allow us to call it a workbook because that would be work. But, you know, just to take the action, because this is a program of action, right? Not that we have to be busy all the time, but we do have to take action because the only way that I come to believe is if I experience it. I have to experience it, and then I believe deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. But unless I'm willing to kind of step out and take the action, I'm not going to get the evidence I need to experience the miracles that do happen. I mean, because everybody, you know, I always heard people say, this will happen, this will happen, this will happen, and I'm just skeptical enough to go, you know, I don't believe you. I need to experience it. So that's what the 10th step is for me, too. It's kind of stepping out and doing it, taking the action so that I can experience it. And so the 10th step for me is gone through the other 9. I've cleared up the past, right, as best as I can for what I know about the past today, right? More will be revealed there, too. It has constantly been revealed. But I've cleaned up the past enough. Now I don't want to keep making the same mistakes. I don't want to keep doing the stuff that got me needing to do, you know. I once did an inventory on my husband. 186 resentments. I kid you not, 186. Because I grew up in a thing where a resentment was a badge of honor. The family I grew up in, it was like a resentment. Yeah, this was our, what I was taught. I resent the fact, you know, point the finger, I resent the fact. And, you know, today I'm so glad that I don't have to be that person anymore. You know, I don't have to be the person who hangs on to anger, you know, that's gonna kill me. You know, that's the anger that, it's not going to kill me today. It might kill me today because I've gotten into car accidents because I was angry. But it probably won't kill me today, but it'll kill me slowly, you know. And so the 10th step for me is it's not an event, even though I do it at the end of the day, but it's not an event. It's an ongoing thing throughout the day. And it's if I'm disturbed for any reason. That's the spot check, right? In the Big Book, it talks about a spot check, and Mary's right. It talks about it in the 11th step. It doesn't actually talk about it in the 10th step. And I think my understanding, or my belief, is that we have to, at least I have to gain an awareness by doing the prayer and meditation. That's kind of real, honest self-awareness in order to do the 10th step, you know, so that I can honestly look at, you know, what is disturbing me? And sometimes I write a letter to God. God, what is going on with me? Because I have no idea. All I know is I'm not happy, joyous, and free. And the big book tells us we'll be happy, joyous, and free. But I'm not always there. You know? And the workshop is called Life Isn't Easy, But It's a Whole Lot Better. And I was telling Mary, I said, you know, I'd rather call it Life Isn't Perfect, But It's a Whole Lot Better. And I have this design for my life that it should go. If everything is going according to plan, it should look like this, 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 and this. And it's not like that. And I have never had an easier life because I'm hard on myself. I will make life more difficult than it needs to be. I will make life unhappy when there's no reason to be unhappy. You know, because I learned that life was something to be gotten through instead of thoroughly enjoyed and even, you know, like savored. And I love this in this 12 and 12. As we work the first 9 steps, we prepare for the adventure of a new life. We don't prepare to get through life. We prepare for the adventure of a new life. But when we approach step 10, we commence to put our see how way of living to practical use. I'm all about practical. Day by day, in fair weather or foul. So, as Mary said, no matter what. Right? Then comes the acid test. Can we stay abstinent, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? A continuous look at our assets and liabilities and a real desire to learn and grow by this means are necessities for us. So I want the real growth that the program gives. I don't want the fake growth of dieting. You know, that I realize in my inventory that what I did was that I had the fake goals of dieting every year. You know, I want to lose 25 pounds every year. It's on my New Year's resolutions list. And what that did was it gave me the illusion that I was growing, but it wasn't real growth. I just kept doing the same thing over and over and over again. And we call that insanity here. So anyway, let's see. So as I said, we put together a handout. And this is not meant to be done every day. This is meant to, these are questions to think about. Some of them are exactly based on the big book. But they're not meant to sit there and do this every day. They're meant to, when I'm disturbed, I sit down and I ask myself this question. You know, we do them every day, but it's not like, you know, don't worry about, I gotta do this. You know, it's like, no, it's a relaxed, you know, we get to do it. And I love in the big book it says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness, and don't forget to ask our own either, and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And a sponsor is really good for that, too. So, anyway, today is just life's so much better. I mean, most days I really enjoy life. I really enjoy it. And for a person like me, that's a miracle. It's a miracle because the conditions of my life are really great. But I can make it so that, you know, I don't appreciate it. I don't enjoy it. I'm always wondering, well, you know, the other shoe's going to drop and, you know, what could go wrong? Today, I'm not doing that. I'm not in morbid reflection. I'm like, hey, this is good. Oh, that person irritates me. Why does it irritate me? Why does that thing irritate me? And that's what the 10th step really is about. It's just that honest self-appraisal and that looking to say, what is going on with me today? So thanks for letting me share. And I think we'll pass out these handouts, and if, would you help me? And what we're going to do is on the first thing there is from exactly from the big book, and then on the second page, I just wrote some other things that I ask myself to on a regular basis, and one of them, a key one, is what am I grateful for? Because I need to be in, I need to stay in gratitude. But how we start here, and I think this is the start, is number one. Number one is, how's my abstinence? Not am I abstinent? How's my abstinence? What's the quality of my abstinence? Is it a white knuckling abstinence? Is it a defiant abstinence? Is it a relaxed and peaceful abstinence? Is it? Okay. I think I got it. No, I don't have any more. Yeah. So yeah, and maybe people next to each other could share and write in. You know, I see some of you have journals and that kind of stuff. But you know, so what I really mean here is, what's the quality of my abstinence? And then I ask myself how I'm doing with the seven tools, and I can tell you that, you know, I'm not saying that you got to work all seven tools. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that abstinence is easier when you do. But just an awareness. Am I using them? And if I'm not, why am I not using them? What is it that's keeping me from that? Okay. Sorry about that. What's keeping me from using the seven tools? You know, is it defiance? Is it that I'm abstinent anyway and I don't want to? You know? So that's just kind of that honest, you know, questioning. So, and then we go on to, so if you want it, do you want to write on abstinence first, the first two questions? You want to have some writing on that and share, or do you want to go on to the past 24 hours? Resentful, selfish, self-centered, dishonest, anxious, unafraid. How about we write on those? Okay? So go ahead. Right? And then when people are done and they want to share, just raise your hand and we'll... No. We'll just take some of them. And so if you find that you have no resentment, no places you've been selfish, self-centered, gotta love you, then you can go on and write on any of these that you want. I just figured we'd take it, you know, piece by piece. Oh, okay. So what it says in terms of, okay, so here's the first few questions, okay? The first one, how's my abstinence? And am I using the seven tools? If not, why not? Then thinking about the past 24 hours, was I resentful? Have I been selfish? Have I been self-centered? Have I been dishonest? Have I been anxious or afraid? So maybe we can just start with those. There's kind of a lot there. And that's right from the big book. It's actually on page 86, which is actually under step 11. But we generally consider that part of step 10 as well. Yeah, we can send up a sign-up sheet. Let's see. Yeah, somebody went to make more copies. Here, you want to sign up on here? If you want to give me your email, I'll email you the sheet. But I'll tell you, these, exact questions, except for the abstinence questions, the first page, they're directly from the big book, page 86. So.
Karen asked me if I wanted to say anything, and I always do. I'm Mary again, and I was just sitting here thinking, gosh, the one thing that I forgot to mention is the one question that I absolutely hate. Where was I at fault? I don't like that one. And you know, we always say when you point a finger at somebody, there's three pointing back at you, and my thumb is a little double-jointed too. So I have to look at my part. What was my part? What was my part? And that's really tough sometimes to see that, especially when you're seething over somebody else's actions. And I may not even see it right away, but that's where my sponsor comes in. And, you know, we're also looking for, do I have an amends to make? And what I try to do today, is to live this day in such a way that I won't have any amends to make tomorrow. And, you know, that means keeping my mouth shut a lot. I think that's one of the best lessons I have ever learned. I believe it saved my marriage. Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth, Mary. So, you know, I may not see it right away, and I have to talk to my sponsor. I have to write about it. Sometimes I can't even get it down on paper, and the emotions get in the way. But I have to make that effort every day. I know that I'm disturbed. I know that I cannot eat over it. I don't pick up. I don't pick up no matter what. So I have to do something. And this is a program of action, and it works as long as I don't eat. But every time I put that food in my mouth again, I have to go through it again. I don't grow. And that's the whole purpose here, is to continue to grow. So that we can live, we live in the sunlight of the Spirit. I love those words. It sounds wonderful. I want to be there. And the steps, the questions, the way that we work this program, the whole process, was my yellow brick road to my higher power. And I am just totally convinced of that and very, very grateful. So.
Hi, I'm Susan, compulsive eater. I'm also finding out about myself that I've probably known this all along, but I denied it. I'm also a compulsive shopper because I can shop anywhere, and I've managed to shop in the last 24 hours at the CVA house store, and it's all pretty much compulsively because I don't think I necessarily needed anything I bought, you know? And I can, you know, justify it until I'm blue in the face, but that's pretty much my selfishness. But the other thing I've been selfish about, I used to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to review my day from the day before and pick apart every action through the day to find out where I'd gone wrong. Because the day never, it was never at 3 o'clock in the morning a good day. The day before, it was always really bad. Fortunately, through these steps, I don't do that as often as I used to. I'm still not perfect at it, but because I will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and come up with some wild idea. Fortunately, I have learned that any wild idea I have at 3 o'clock in the morning probably is not a good thing to take action on when I get to work at 7:30 that morning. So I have learned that much. But the thing that I wrote down, if I've been anxious or afraid, and yes, and I've been wondering and I've been anxious about making a good impression on all of you, that you're not going to go, wow, look at her. And I thought, why? You know? And I thought, why am I so worried about that? You know? But it is something that's just, you know, you're supposed to make a good impression. First impression's a good impression, right? So that was one thing I've been anxious about, and then I went shopping over it, I guess. So that's where I'm at. So thank you for letting me share.
Yeah, and actually that's on the following page, because that, it is in the big book in terms of it says, surely you've done something. Actually, I think it's in the 12 and 12. It says, surely you've done something right today. And so we do need to look at that. And if you go on the next page, it asks that. What did you do well today? What could you do better? And maybe there's nothing you could have done better today. Maybe you did the best you could today, right? So yes, it is, that's the honest appraisal. We all have assets and defects. And I even, when I kind of cringe a little bit with defect, because they're character traits. So even my best character traits, if I overuse them, they're liabilities. So socially acceptable, socially revered, but if when I use them too much, they go into the negative column. You know, and I've done inventory that way too. One page across the top, down the middle, and actually in our 10 step questions in CNOW, it says make two columns, plus minus. It could be as simple as that. That's what your 10 step could be. Plus minus. I did this well, this stuff I do differently. Yeah. So anybody have anything else that they wrote on already that they have I kept something, this one I like, have I kept something to myself that should be discussed with another person at once? Mary hit on this, that, you know, about our secrets, because I was very much that type of eater too. I don't eat in front of other people, I eat in secret. So, you know, is there something that I'm holding on to that I really need to talk to somebody else? Could be my sponsor. The big book doesn't even say it has to be a sponsor. The big book says it could be your priest, your best friend, some close-lipped, tight-lipped friend. I think that's what it says. Tight-lipped friend. You know, so, you know, it's best if somebody knows you completely. I find that having somebody know me absolutely, completely, my good points and my bad points, lets me know that I am a lovable person even though I have defects, even though I am not perfect, I'm still lovable, still worthy of the space I take up. So, you know, so just sharing everything about me with another person is really helpful. Which of my other defects of character were activated? So, you know. What other things? Maybe I don't have any resentment today. Maybe I wasn't selfish or self-centered. But are there any things else for me that's people-pleasing, you know, that's caring about what other people think about me to the extent that I'm willing to do things that are absolutely not the right things for me to do for myself, you know, in order for me to be able to trust myself? I wrote on here, one of the things I wrote on here is who needs and wants my help? Am I willing to give it with no strings attached? I wrote that because that's one of my character defects. I give with strings attached. I have really realized in doing 10-step work that I force my help upon people who don't want it and don't need it. Or, you know, in their mind, they don't need it. I may say, they need it, but they don't want it from me. But I will do that. And that's, you know, that makes my life unmanageable. Yeah, so the question is, how do you honor the people that need you, not doing for them what they could do for themselves? That comes right back down to the original inventory, fear. I'm afraid that something bad is going to happen to them. My sponsor will tell you this. I have had, she's been listening to this for a year, about my fears about what will happen to other people if I don't help them. You know? And that's not coming from, I once wrote out this, the way I work doesn't work, the way I love is not loving. And that is not loving. You know, that's how I see it today, but that's not loving. When I do that, I am really self-centered. I'm trying to make my own fears go away when I do that. Yeah. Okay, who wants to share? We got a lot of people in this room, and I know we have a lot of experience, strength, and hope. Are you coming? She's coming, she's not.
I'm Suzanne. I'm a compulsive eater. And I really appreciate this workshop because it's something that I struggle with and I don't really know how to do. So, what I wrote was, my abstinence today is as my higher power wants it to be. I'm not perfect, but I make progress every day. My mental sobriety gets shaky when I don't use all the tools. The less tools I use, the more my anxiety level increases. The most important thing I avoid and forget is asking for help. When I ask for help, it always comes. It might not come in my time frame, but it always comes, just as it should be in God's time. Okay, I am at times anxious and afraid of making mistakes, as I am always reminded I make mistakes, I am not a mistake. Fears are an act of being self-centered and selfish, as it is all about myself. If I am honest with myself, I know that I am perfect just as I am, and if I take the action to change on a daily basis, that is all I need to do. If I do things from my heart and without judgment or resentment, I am able to get out of my own way and help others. Thank you for letting me share.
Or doesn't want to share, but needs to.
I have come to, okay, the question was, if you are working the steps in order, but still slipping and sliding with the food, how do you continue to work the steps? When I was struggling with the food, I would go around asking everybody in the room, if you were thin, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? And they would tell me, oh, Mary, you know, if you're not abstinent, there's a step you're not working or there's a tool you're not using. So I would buckle down and I would make sure I'm working all the steps and I would make, you know, the tools and still maybe staying abstinent for a little while, you know, staying abstinent for a few days, staying abstinent for 3 weeks, but always slipping and sliding away. And for me, I cannot work my way abstinent, and I can't tool my way abstinent. I couldn't do it. Whoever put this brilliant program together put abstinence in the first half of step one for a reason. My head is so mucked when I'm not abstinent that I have to get the food right first. And when I work with people who are in relapse and trying to come back, I always tell them, forget everything. Forget everything. Commit your food. Take care of the food. For you, it's about the food. We say in the program, it's not about the food and it's not about the weight. And for me, it's not about the food as long as I'm abstinent. And it's not about the weight as long as I'm at or near my goal. I'm sorry, but if I'm not, I'm nuts. I'm thinking about it. I'm obsessed with it. I'm planning it. It's in my head. I can't need a meeting. I have 5 pounds to lose. I can't do this, but you know, I have to get abstinent. I have to clean up my abstinence. I have to change it. I have to drop something. I can't eat this. I can't, you know. Always something. So for me, I have to be abstinent first. Get your head on the pillow tonight, abstinent. Somebody called me once and said, Mary, I just can't, you know, and I said, write your food down, call me in the morning. Called me after breakfast. Did you have an abstinent breakfast? Yes. You're abstinent. You're an abstinent person. And now you work as an abstinent person. You have another abstinent meal. You don't need 30 days to be abstinent. You're abstinent as soon as you have one abstinent meal. And then I have to get out of thinking I'm always slipping, I'm always sliding, I'm always breaking it. I don't know how long it's going to last this time. But just one day at a time, one meal at a time, and just put your head down on the pillow at night. And say, thank you, God, for another abstinent day.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, we're not in a race to finish the steps of the program because we're never going to finish. So we're just going to keep doing the steps and working the program. So, right, we just need to get our abstinence down. And abstinence is a step 1, 2, 3, you know. It is. It's a, you know, it's a... Really, when I can really admit how powerless I am over food and the unmanageability of my life, because that's the other component. If I don't recognize how unmanageable my life is, that I fight with people, that I, you know, that life is harder than it is, then that's part of it too, you know, but that I'm absolutely powerless over food, that I can't fix the problem myself. I have to come to believe that something, I want to say outside myself, but I feel like it's inside because I feel that's my source of power is inside me. But something else other than me, my ego, myself, can fix it and that I'm willing to let it, you know, that I'm willing to turn all my food over. I'm willing to turn all of my decisions over, even though I may be in tremendous fear about because I don't know how it's going to turn out. And I had an experience with that when I got a new sponsor and she told me I needed to start over again. And I said, but I'm already at my goal weight. And she said to me, I said, I don't want to lose any weight. And she said, God and I won't let you starve. And I'm really grateful for that. You know, I was really grateful I had about that much willingness to do it. And, you know, so, yeah. Okay, we have time for maybe a couple here.
Great, I'll sign in a minute. I'm Shelley, compulsive eater, food addict, and I just wanted to add to what you said, and thank you for this workshop. Got a lot out of it. I was one that had 7 years of abstinence. I was just on that pink cloud for a long time and then began to slip and slide and being very dishonest or lying about what I was doing. And I just want to share about your question because I asked the same thing. I just couldn't put days together. And we have, my sister opened a meeting, Relapse Prevention, that is in Whittier. And it was that, not that that meeting was magical, but because there were people in that room that had been in where I am, that were slipping and sliding, that had put days together. And that in itself, I had just so much understanding because I had been abstinent for so long. And my sponsor, you know, is like 20 years, never slept. So I think there's a different experience there, and sometimes you have to look for different people to share with, and you get a lot out of that. So thanks for letting me share.
Okay. So hi, I'm Agnes. I'm a compulsive eater. I love step 10, particularly just to put my head down at the end of the day and go over the day. Sometimes I don't find the resentment or the anger or the dishonesty or whatever it was, at least not more than usual, you know, but just trying to figure out with God things that I give myself a pat on the back for. You know, oh, I didn't lose my temper when this person did this, you know. Not just counting my blessings, that's a big one. Because by the time I get to 5, oh, I woke up today, oh, I'm not in the hospital, oh, I had an abstinent day and all that stuff, I really get a high out of it, you know, and of course I commit the next day. But just going back and making sure that I don't focus on my defects and what I did wrong or the woulda, shoulda, coulda, you know, just saying, well, what are the 3 things that I'm grateful that with the help of God I did right? That's very empowering, you know, at least trying to work on the defects and saying, well, I am getting somewhere, if, even though I'm not exactly where I want to be.
Yeah, progress, not perfection. Anybody else? Anybody want to share something they're grateful for?
Hi, I'm Karen, recovering from compulsive eating.
Hi, Karen.
Also, for me, it's really, really, really important to stress what I'm doing right and to look, take a look at that. And I list the qualities in me that make whatever I'm happy about that day possible. And then I talk to myself about it in the mirror, because my natural tendency is to dwell on what's not right and what's wrong and what am I doing wrong, and I'm naturally that way more. So it's really, I really place the emphasis more on what I'm doing right. And obviously if I'm fearful, if I'm resentful, then that's something that I can take to God. But I can't remove my resentment. I have to take that to God and discuss it with another person. So that was one thing I wanted to say. The other is, you know, about working the steps in order. If you're on step, let's say you've put down the food and you're on, let's just say you're doing your questions, you're on step 2 or 3, do you still recommend doing a 10th step? Or what if you're on step 5, do you still do one? So that's it. Thanks.
The question was, if you're working the first 3 steps, do you still work a 10th step? And I believe step 10 comes after 9, and you're working, you're writing, you're working the program and working the tools by answering those questions and working on those questions every day. And you will be doing an inventory next. And, you know, that's what I love about this program, is that it keeps us focused on recovery. On the recovery that is offered by CEA Howe. And you are where you are, and that's great. Yeah.
Thank you.